Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you are feeling a little radio shy and you would like to not be heard, you can send me an email at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to make a couple of announcements. We're only weeks away from our next healing weekend at the end of April, and it's going to be right outside Washington, D.C. It's going to be a wonderful weekend. Some of the women who are coming there, I'm so excited I'm going to be seeing them again. These are women who have been part of our network for a while. Some of them have been part of it for a short time, but all have either gone through healing or they're going through the process, and they want to reach out to others who need to be in that situation. So it's a wonderful weekend. We have some wonderful guests coming, therapists for the second day to give good advice on moving forward in healing. And there's no cost for this, just the cost is dinner to cover the expense of the room. And, of course, your room, which is a great group rate. It's a weekend that will definitely change your lives forever, I promise that. You know, it really has its impact on everyone who comes and attends. So if you'd like to join me and some of the most wonderful women you could ever meet, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And in the subject box, just put in Healing Weekend. And I'd also like to send a lot of love to one of our straight wives, Jen. who's in her recovery in Texas and doing really well, moving ahead, to let her know that we're all thinking about you, Jen, and especially on a special day like today, on Valentine's Day, I personally would like to wish all of our women and all of the men who are part of our support network a wonderful day of love. I know it's a difficult holiday for many people going through it, as it was for me for many years. And tonight, to help me talk about that and make you feel a little bit better about yourself, as one of our members of the Straight Wives Club, who's a wonderful, really active member as far as helping people and supporting people. And she's also the author of a book that's very comforting to people. So welcome here, Deborah. Deborah Sutton is our guest tonight. And how are you, Deborah?
I'm great. How are you, Bonnie?
I'm doing good. Deborah's talking to us from Texas, and it's a little bit warmer than here on the East Coast. You said you had a nice day there today.
It's been very nice here today.
Yes, and it's been nice here today, too, if you were inside and looking outside at the 4-degree weather. But it was sunny, so you wouldn't know it unless you stepped foot outside. So I guess it's not the same as being in Texas, but soon it will be, I'm sure. And I know Texas will be getting hot soon, right?
Yes.
I always say there's nothing hotter in life than Texas in the summer. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. It can be, suffocating.
Exactly. I'll never forget one time I went to Texas, and it was in August, and it was my first time, and I got off the airplane, and I was gasping for breath, looking for the air. I said, where do they put the air? I can't even breathe. And I thought, how do people live like this? You know, and I was young then, I was only in my 20s, and I was, like, shocked. And I said, I can't believe people are actually living in this, but it's true. I guess it's all what you get used to, right?
Yes, and you're used to the cold. The cold.
Yeah, I don't love it, but, you know, you do get used to it. Because it could be so much worse. Like, people live in Albany where they have snow, like, for 9 months a year, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they survive at all. So we've been pretty lucky. I was telling you earlier, this has been our best winter on the East Coast that I can remember. So I will not complain. Deborah, you know, besides being a member of our support group now for a while, you're also the author of a book, Science of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors. And your book's been out, what, about a year now?
Yes.
And well, I know that from...
May,
when did it come
May
out?
May will be... In May. May will be a year. It's almost...
And I've heard such wonderful feedback from our women who buy the book and who have commented to me on how helpful it was to them, because you have so many great things in this book. And for women who want to learn more and, you know, want to make a connection with other women, this is a great opportunity to do it. You know, you can find Deborah's book on Amazon. Go to Deborah Sutton, Sutton, and her book will pop up in either the paperback edition, or else you can buy it as an e-book. And there's lots of good stories in there, not only from Deborah, on signs of recognizing gay husband behaviors, but also, you know, from other women who are part of our network. And Deborah also has a wonderful blog. She's a very talented writer. And Deborah, you just put in a blog for Valentine's Day with that theme, right?
Yes.
So I thought maybe you could... Yeah, I wanted you to read it for our listeners, because it really impressed me so much. And you said you'd be willing to do that. So
yes,
I'll let you take over from here.
It's time to start loving yourself. And it starts out with self-love. Self-love is not selfish, it's necessary. Learning to love and care for yourself is the most important life-changing thing you will ever do. It has the power to transform your life. When you love yourself, people will treat you differently. How can we expect others to love us when we don't love ourselves? We show others how to treat us by what we allow. If we allow bad and toxic behavior from people, then there are never any consequences for their actions. This behavior will continue because they know you aren't going anywhere. What you allow will continue. Surround yourself with positive people. Do not hesitate to remove toxic people from your life. Forgive yourself. Show yourself unconditional love, accepting everything about yourself the good and the bad. If there is something you need to change, work on changing this without beating up on yourself. Beating up on yourself is self-defeating and does not help bring about positive change. Forgive yourself for any past mistakes and leave the past in the past where it belongs. If you are constantly rehashing the past, you cannot move forward. An attitude of gratitude. Live each day for today, not looking back and not looking too far into the future. If you are looking back and looking ahead, you miss what today has to offer. Instead of concentrating on what you don't have, learn gratitude, being grateful for all you do have. You will be surprised at all you have to be grateful for. Practice an attitude of gratitude. Patience. Be patient with yourself. Change does not happen overnight. It took years to get you where you are right now. Practice showing yourself loving kindness. Show yourself the patience and loving kindness you would show an infant who is just learning how to walk. After all, you would not treat a baby learning how to walk with impatience or anger. Self-acceptance. We all want to be accepted by others, but accepting yourself is of way more importance. When we are accepting of ourselves, it will naturally follow others will accept you. Your opinion of yourself should be held in the highest regard. Then if someone doesn't accept you, it's not so devastating. You have to realize that not everyone is going to like you, and that's okay. The power of positive thinking. Practice positive affirmations. For example, tell yourself, you are beautiful, you are worthy. I know this can be difficult when you have been stuck with a negative mindset for so long. By doing this, you are getting rid of those negative thought patterns. Negative thought patterns can have a devastating impact on your life. Negative thoughts can make you a prisoner of your own mind, which will only lead to criticism and self-beating, regret, and guilt. You can change these negative thought patterns by becoming aware of them and making a conscious choice to change this line of thinking. I believe negative thoughts can become habitual. Bad habits are meant to be broken. In a couple of months, you can learn a new habit of positivity. Try something new. Try meditation, writing, keep a journal, whatever you love doing. Reconnect with your spirituality. You could try, for example, a daily devotional, take a walk, connect with nature, learn a new dance or exercise. Let go of mind-numbing, which can be shopping, eating, drinking, anything that avoids discomfort. Remember, Valentine's Day isn't just for lovers. We can celebrate our family and friends. We can celebrate showing a new love and appreciation for ourselves. Being single is not the worst thing in life. In fact, I'm celebrating being single. I have more to celebrate now than I ever did being married. It is far worse to end up with someone who makes you feel like you are alone. And then I added some more stuff in, some more writing into this about forming healthy personal boundaries, because I think this is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, when we don't have healthy personal boundaries, we have no sense of self in a relationship. Everything becomes about pleasing, fixing, or caring about the other person. If we always put our needs on the back burner, making ourselves last, this is very unhealthy. The first step in caring for yourself is when you begin to form healthy personal boundaries. Healthy boundaries need to be flexible. You don't want to be too rigid, because if you are, you close yourself off, and then it's hard to find intimacy. And this is one of the first things I was compelled to do. I was no longer willing to not care about my own needs. After what I went through, this was not something that had to be taught to me. It was automatic. It was the first step in caring about myself. It was something I had to adjust over time. At least for the first 2 years, I was just a little over the top, and my emotions finally stabilized. And that's why I say we can't be too rigid or we drive people away. But healthy boundaries define who we are and teach people how to treat us. Boundaries are the line that says this is where I end and you begin.
Well, I think those are very important aspects of setting boundaries, and I think sometimes it's easier said than done. What do you think?
It is easier said than done, and when I first got back to Texas and I had been through all that I had been through, I was kind of over the top. Like, I thought everybody was stepping on me.
Mm-hmm.
My emotions were just all over the place. But it was so important, you know, to make, you know, start making boundaries for myself. And I did, and it takes some, you know, some give and take. I'm glad I didn't drive everybody away with it, though.
Yeah, I think part of it is learning assertiveness skills, and a lot of time people don't understand what assertiveness is. But assertive behavior is when you ask for what you want, and you don't have to feel guilty about asking for it. Because I think a lot of us have non-assertive behavior, and a lot of times when you're non-assertive and you're just willing to do what you have to do, even if you don't want to do it, eventually in time it just gets to the top, and then you become aggressive. And there's nothing wrong with being assertive and saying, look, this is not what's good for me, or, you know, I'd rather not go. I think by nature, if we weren't when we started out, which I think most of us were people pleasers, we were always looking to please people because that we thought that's what we're supposed to do in order to be loved. I know that's how I was. Were you?
Yeah, I was the same. I had a very hard time saying no.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I was really weak when it came to that, and there were a lot of exercises and lessons I had to learn from that. And little things in life, it really affects you. Like, for instance, this had nothing to do with my marriage, but it just gives you an overall view of how ridiculous I was because I wasn't assertive. And I tell this story so that people can learn. I used to have a job, and each year you would get automatically a raise. And on my fourth year, I didn't get a raise. So, of course, rather than go and ask for one, like what happened to it, I just assumed, well, maybe they didn't like my work. Or maybe they didn't think that I did the same job this year that I did in the past, although I knew I was working really hard. But I was afraid to ask for me. And that's just how my personality was. When you're a people pleaser and you don't want, you know, to hurt other people and you feel like you're not good enough. You don't want to rock the boat, or you feel you're not good enough, or maybe that's their message to you. And what happened was about 3 months later, my boss called me into the office and she said, did you notice that you hadn't gotten a raise this year? And I said, yes, I did. And I guess it was, you know, the company didn't think I deserved one. She said, no, the company thought you deserved one. It was a bookkeeping mistake. Why didn't you say something? And she said, you know, we'll give it to you retroactively. But the fact that I was just so afraid to ask for it, once again, it shows that you're not able to assert yourself and say things that are important to you, and you just accept that maybe I'm just not good enough. And I think when we come out of these marriages, our behavior is very non-assertive because we haven't been validated in so long. We've been neglected.
Yes.
Our emotional state's been neglected for so long that we become like that. Do you think that's true?
Oh, I do think that's absolutely true.
I know that I was very weakened when I came out of the marriage. And
I just didn't have any faith
in myself at all.
Yeah, it's so hard when you come out of the, you know, lived in the negativity for so long to, you know, turn around and just be positive all of a sudden. I mean, that's something you have to work on.
You know, I hate to change the subject, but I do want to bring something up for a moment. Excuse me for diverting from what we're talking about for a moment, Deborah, but this has really been on my mind. And we have a wonderful woman who's part of our network, and I'm sure you'll know who I'm talking about. These guys like to play games. You know, a lot of them are game players. The whole time that they're married to us, they're playing a game. And after they leave us, they're still playing a game. And some of them will never come to terms with who they are as far as telling us. I mean, they know what they're doing, and they know they're having gay behavior, you know, in their interactions with men and sex. But they just don't want anybody to know. And a lot of these guys will continue to play games, and I just want to make women aware of this, especially during a holiday or a season like Valentine's Day. And it's funny because my newsletter that will be going out tomorrow, the next day, I call these the horror days, not holidays, horror days. And that's a term that I've coined for starting mid-November till February 15th. So you have from November to December, December to January. There are 3 months out of the year, I feel, are what I call our horror days, because these are all seasons where you have people where romance in love is really the going theory, whether it be starting at Thanksgiving, then moving into Christmas, then moving into New Year's, moving into Valentine's Day. It's like wherever you look, people are throwing love in your face, couples and, you know, husbands and wives and people getting engaged. And we see this all over, and it's going to be very hurtful to women who are going through, you know, these marriages right at this time, either in them or getting out of them or just out of them. And yet a lot of these men, like I say, rather than take responsibility and have the level of maturity to do the right thing, you know, they'll continue to gaylight you, as I call it, you know, gay men are gaslighting women, it's gaylighting them and making them think that, you know, they're crazy, like they'll go out and start dating other women or pretend to be dating them. And some of them actually get married again and again and again. And it's so hurtful when women start now thinking, how come I wasn't woman enough for him, but some other woman is? And you've seen that in our group, right?
I have. And I understand, you know, especially when you're just coming out of the marriage or the relationship and they move on so quickly and easily, whether it's with a man or a woman. You know, they move on fast.
I think a lot of them move on to other women, you know, the ones who are in hiding, because they don't want their cover blown. And that's why we have multiple marriages. People say to me, well, you say there's 4 million women in, you know, in this country. That sounds like really high because, you know, it looks like maybe there's only 2.5 to 3 million men who have been married who are gay. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, that may be true, but they're not counting in how many men have these multiple marriages. And I would say at least 10% of these gay married men will go on and marry again and again if they have to. Just for the fact that they want to have a cover, right?
Oh, yeah. I heard and from someone, and someone contacted me, and my ex-husband was dating a woman briefly. I don't think it worked out for him, but so, yes, they do go on, you know, to marry and date women.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, I see it all the time.
Hiding.
They keep hiding, and then whatever credibility you think you have, they try to diminish from you so they can go around telling people, she's crazy, she was accusing me of being gay, how could I be gay? You know, I have children, I had a wife, I have now another wife, I'm getting married again, I love women. And, you know, it's just a repeated cycle that goes on and on, but while it's happening to us, it is extremely hurtful. And I tell women, they're playing a game and you just can't be part of it anymore. You know, this is their own game, and it's for two reasons: to make you suffer, because that gives you doubts about yourself, like you're thinking, well, you know, maybe I just wasn't woman enough for him. Or maybe because of me, I didn't fulfill his need, you know, and made him turn to men, because they accuse you of that anyway.
Yeah.
In some cases. Will say, well, I wouldn't have done it, but because you did this and that, it drove me to it.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Yes. Oh, they throw everything they can at you. I mean,
everything,
you know, always,
that you can possibly imagine, they'll try to blame you and turn the tables on you. Now, this is not all of them, but I would say it's at least half of them. And because they just can't be honest, you know, first to themselves and then to their wives. And I always tell women, if they can't be honest with themselves, how do you expect them to be honest with you? You know, they're so decompartmentalized, you know, or compartmentalized that they can put things in different compartments. And that you know, one thing has nothing to do with the other. They can't even see any kind of relationship. That's how good they are at this. Was yours like that?
Yes. I mean, they have this straight image to protect. And I guess now there's people like Joe Court telling them that they are straight because they have a straight identity. But they're just really closeted gay men. And that straight identity is not real, really, who they are.
Well, you know what? I think that people attack me all the time for, you know, coming up with such a black and white kind of thinking. And people are saying, well, they could have a gay sexual identity, but, you know, they're really not gay because they identify as being straight, or they're confused, or they're not quite sure, you know, or I hear the stories, well, all men get excited by men, it doesn't mean they're gay, you know, or all men would like to try to experiment. I don't think all men would like to try to experiment, but, okay, they can say whatever they want to say, and they can call it whatever they want to call it, and that's why I hate calling it gay, because to me, a lot of men will never come to terms with that word. So, like, sometimes when men write to me and they say, I'm not gay, I answer them, okay, you're not gay. You're not straight. And I think that's what it comes down to. You can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself, but if you're with a man and you want a penis, then you're just not straight, right?
Right. I had a man comment on my blog not long ago, and he was saying, you know, these men are straight. They just like to have occasional sex with men. But they will always, like, marry women. They just want occasional sex with men. Well, I don't call that straight. He was really trying to redefine the word gay.
And I think that's okay. Let them define it however they want. I just want to say that it's not straight. And that's all you have to really know, because if you're looking to date somebody and they say to you, look, I'm just not straight, and you don't have to even go into it, like, do you really want to go with this man?
Right.
So this way they don't have to label themselves. You know, they can just call themselves non-straight men.
Yeah.
And that way it wouldn't mean, maybe they're in their heads they're bisexual, they can say they're asexual, they can say they're confused sexual, they can say they're metrosexual. They can say they're pansexual, but they just can't say they're straight. And I think that that would be much easier, don't you?
I do think it would be much easier. They make it so confusing.
I know.
I'm straight.
And they put themselves
I'm
on
straight.
So many
they call
levels.
They call themselves straight, but then they like to have occasional sex with men. That's confusing.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't believe that straight men want to have occasional sex with men.
No.
You know, I've been around a long time. I'm old. I've been with a lot of men. And I've been with a lot of straight men. And those straight men don't want to have an occasional encounter with a penis.
No.
If anything,
they'd
be looking to cheat with another woman, not with another man. Right?
Right. I was married once before to a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem. He was always, you know, wanting other women.
Exactly. That's what you expect from a straight man.
Yes.
But you don't expect a straight man to say, well, I love being straight, but sometimes I like to, you know, have a penis or two. No, that's not within the realm. But if he is like that, then he just has to call himself non-straight. And that could leave you wide open, like, for anything you want to call yourself. And I think that'd be a lot easier.
And then I think
maybe it'd be... What do you think?
Oh, it just boils down to this. Is that what you want in your relationship? Is that what you signed up for?
Yeah. Although, I'll tell you the truth. I think for some women who just don't understand human sexuality, they would think that if I show them enough love and enough affection, and he really loves me, he won't be thinking like that anymore. Does that ever cross your mind?
Yeah,
when
it
you
did.
Were going
I
through
mean,
this?
I didn't know he was gay throughout my marriage. I found out at the end of my marriage, but through all the problems he had, I thought that if I just show him enough love.
And how far at the end did you find out?
Well, we had already filed for divorce, and I moved back here to Texas, where I'm from, and
mm-hmm.
we were still talking on the phone, and I found out he made sexual advances toward a man that I know, and that just triggered me all kinds of things, and I remembered, you know, the gay porn I found on the computer once, and he blamed me for that.
Mm-hmm. You were looking at the gay porn for men?
No, he said that I gave us a computer virus.
Oh, the old virus story. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that. But I just want women to be aware, you know, because of Valentine's Day and you're feeling like a lot of women feel more emotional at this point in time than maybe normally they would, because it is really a trigger to think back to when you were spending time with someone who you thought loved you and someone who you did love. And, you know, now they're playing all these games. So just be aware a lot of these guys are game players. And another thing that I found, Deborah, is that a lot of these guys are very controlling. Now, was the guy you were married to controlling?
Oh, yes. He was controlling. Everything always had to be his way.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about divorce throughout our 22-year marriage. I mean, he talked about divorce everything he wanted, if I didn't want to buy it or, you know... Everything was an issue, a divorce issue.
Mm-hmm. But and, were you afraid that he might divorce you?
Not until the end. I always thought he was just using manipulation to get his way.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, I knew he really wanted out.
But he would talk about it before that, right?
Oh, he talked about it from the very beginning of our marriage. And
mm-hmm.
he was always talking about divorce, and the marriage lasted 22 years, so I got used to hearing divorce, you know. And the last time he said that to me, I said, let's go get it. And we went, and I said, you know... He asked for it, so we went and did self-divorce papers.
Did you ever have second thoughts about it?
I did, but I didn't realize. You know, I had suspicions, and his mother had asked me if he was gay, and my mother asked me if he was gay, and... And I wondered because of the, we didn't have sex for 12 years, so yeah, it crossed my mind. But I didn't
mm-hmm.
have any concrete proof, and at the time, didn't have any concrete proof, and I don't think I was really wanting to accept that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that's just so shocking that we don't want to accept it. But I wanted to go back to the whole issue of men who are in controlling, because I think that many of us have been in those kind of relationships, and there's different reasons why men are controlling under straight relationships, but these are different. I mean, the way that they control may be the same, but the reasons are different. And in my newsletter that's coming out, you know, I write a little bit about that. What are the reasons that men are controlling? But in our cases, men are controlling because most of them are trying to control their secret because they have no control over who they are. So they feel that they can control themselves internally, they'll control the external situation, which is us. And this article that I was reading, you know, because of doing some extra research with this, I thought was very interesting about 8 bad reasons why women stay in painful relationships. So the first one was that because being someone's everything is intoxicating stuff, at least at first. that when you met, he only had eyes for you. He called to say good morning. He called to say I love you at lunch. He wanted to be the last voice you heard before you went to sleep. When you left work or your last class for the day, there he was waiting for you. If another guy even looked at you, he put his arm protectively around you. If a guy friend called you up, he pouted. He wanted all your attention. In exchange, he gave you attention as no one else ever had before. He wined you and dined you, or at least took you out for pizza and a beer several times a week, and made you feel like a princess. Sounds like a romantic beginning, doesn't it? And I think for some women, that's how it starts. Did it for you?
Yes. I really did feel like he only had eyes for me. I mean, throughout the marriage. And I know now that's because he wasn't interested in women.
Right.
I could say that same thing about that you're reading, you know, there about my first husband,
mm-hmm.
who was very controlling, too. But yes, the
mm-hmm.
reasons are different.
Right. So this is about controlling men in general, not specifically gay or straight, but these are some of the behaviors that we need to look out for. And I always tell women that if you don't realize these kinds of behaviors, that when you go out and meet someone again, you're going to make the same mistake. You know, he may not be gay, but he's still going to be destructive to you or toxic to you. So things that we may take for granted, I'm so glad, you know, I've been so sad since my marriage ended and my husband rejected me so much. He never wanted to be with me, never wanted to make love to me, and here's this guy, he's calling me all the time, you know, and I feel like we're really making connection, he's very protective. You know, you have to watch out for that because that's not what it is, right?
Right.
It's very easy to get trapped when you're feeling insecure to start with. And it said if your guy is so insecure he needs control, his attention gradually becomes claustrophobic. Over time, his demands for all your attention all the time hems you in. And you find yourself frantically explaining your every move that didn't involve him. Staying a bit late for work, a girl's night out, even a visit to your mother on a Saturday morning became grounds for a fight. And what started out as wonderful attention became not so wonderful control.
You describe it so accurately. My ex-husband, we used to work nights, and, you know, I better be home, and I better answer the phone when he tries to call. I mean, if I went in the bathroom to take a shower, I would take the phone in there with me in case he tried to call, because if I didn't answer when he got home, he would be, where were you?
Mm-hmm. And that's how it is. They want to know where we are, what we're doing, who we're talking to. And I didn't write this. It is very accurate, though. It came from another article I was reading, but I totally agree with all of this. And then it says, here's another thing. These guys can be absolutely charming, that you didn't fall in love with your boyfriend for no good reason. He can be charming. He can be romantic. He can say the things that every woman would like to hear. Sometimes he lets you see a sweet vulnerability that melts your heart. He seems to feel so genuinely terrible after the two of you have a big fight. He brings apologies and flowers. He promises he'll be less jealous. He says you really are his everything. Love making at times like this is delicious. He says all the right things to make you want to give him another chance. Things are wonderful for a while, but then it starts all over again. You come home a little late and his eyes look stormy. You make a phone call and he has to know who you're talking to. Pretty soon you're feeling hemmed in again and you know that there's just going to be another blowout. And I think that's part of it too. You know, these guys are charming. It's like I say to women who fall in love with guys who abuse them. It's not like the first time the guy came to take you out. He, you know, took you out on a date. Instead of giving you a kiss goodbye, he punched you in the face. Because if he did, chances are you wouldn't go out with him again. You know, something like that builds up over time. They're always on their best behaviors in the beginning, right?
Yes, and sometimes, you know, you'll go through a honeymoon phase again when they think you're about to leave them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
or they think you're on to them.
Yes, and then it's just a vicious cycle. Up and down.
And especially with the gay thing, because a lot of times when you do catch them and they say to you, oh, my God, I'm so sorry I hurt you, I was drunk. You know, they'll come up with a million reasons why it happened one time only. Or they'll say, you know, I have a number of women this week who wrote to me, you know, about their ex-husbands or their husbands or soon-to-be ex-husbands went through sexual abuse. And if that's dealt with, can it be turned around? You know, they'll come up with everything. And that's not to say that some men aren't sexually abused, because I know they are as a fact. But that doesn't mean that it makes you gay. And,
yeah.
You know, I hate when people use that excuse that when men are, sexually abused as boys, that's what turns them gay. Because my response to that would be then if women who are sexually abused, when they grow up, they would want to get into sadomasochism. I mean, why would you go to something that's so repulsive to you, or something that's so painful to you, or something that's hurt you so bad emotionally, and now that you're an adult, you want to return to it? That doesn't even make sense.
No,
but,
it doesn't.
You know, they'll try to use that for sympathy or for saying, well, look, you know, if you love me enough, then I can change. That's not really who I am. You know, I just see the excuses all the time. How about with the women that you find? Are you finding the same thing?
Yes, and then there's a woman, and she went through the same experience that I did. You know, when we confronted them about being gay, they never spoke to us again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or they wouldn't speak to us. You know, mine never would speak to me about it. And he broke
mm-hmm.
contact when I questioned him. Now, if I would have never found out, he would still be
mm-hmm.
talking to me today, and I know that for a fact. I mean, I'm pretty sure about that. If I wouldn't have found out, he would still be talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, maybe it's a good thing you found out then. You don't need him to be talking
yes.
to you, right?
I'm glad I found out. I'd rather know the truth and deal with the pain of that than to continue living in blindness.
I know, and for people who don't know you, I mean, Deborah's a beautiful woman, you know, very beautiful, and there'd have to be something really wrong with a man not to want to make love to you or not to have any kind of sexual, you know, encounters with you for all those years. I mean, did it ever faze you, why isn't he doing this? Or did he have an excuse all the time?
He had, he was depressed and on antidepressants. And
mm-hmm.
he had Hep C and had to go on treatment for that. And at times he drank heavily, so he used alcohol, depression, medication, until, you know, the years went on like that, no sex. And then finally, you know, he just said he could no longer function sexually.
Mm-hmm. And did that make sense to you?
Well, I mean, I don't know why at the time it did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At the time I really bought all those excuses. But sometimes I would think, a man still wants sex. And that did go through my mind. If they're not having sex with you, they're having it with somebody else. But I never saw any signs of women, you know, and that's what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, signs of other women. I never saw that. So I felt pretty secure in that, you know, that there were no other women.
Yeah, well, I guess there weren't. But like I say, I don't think it's unusual either that when people are older, because you weren't young kids when you got married, right?
I was 33 and he was 28.
Okay, well, you were young, but let's say over 22 years, you know, he went 28, 38, 48. You know, you hear all these commercials on television that, you know, half the men, as they're getting older, they have some kind of erectile dysfunction. You know, these commercials on television are really prevalent all over. So you're thinking, well, maybe it's just a natural thing with men. You know, as they get older, they get less interested. Were you thinking that?
Yes, I did. But, you know, early in the marriage, he was not that sexual. You know, it was very early on that he was not. I mean, we had sex, obviously, but not. he was not very sexual throughout the marriage, and then it just came to a complete stop.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you were saying is a really good clue for women to understand this, that men want sex. And if they're not going to be having it with you, then you really have to consider that they're having it somewhere else. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, absolutely.
And especially men who are younger, in their 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, I know that men want sex when they're older, 60s, 70s. Look, my boyfriend's in his 70s, and it's certainly never an issue for him. So why would it be an issue for somebody who's in their 30s or 40s? Unless there are other issues that are involved. And if you say you want to go for help, a lot of times these guys say, no, I don't want to go for help. You know, I'm not doing this. You know, they're not taking the steps. Did you ever think about going for help with him?
Well, he did see a psychiatrist during our marriage, and I would go to appointments with him. And it was brought up in one of the appointments with the doctor, the psychiatrist, that he could no longer function sexually, and the doctor ordered tests on his testosterone levels, but he never went to take those tests. He knew they weren't necessary.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
that
you
was
feel
all
that there
for
was...
show.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that
did
he did that.
Right. Did you feel you ever had a like a real emotional connection with him through those years?
I felt an emotional connection to him. Now I don't believe he felt one, had one toward me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I was bonded to an abusive person. You know, it's hard to describe, but I felt a bond with him.
Mm-hmm.
Even if
it did you feel sorry for him?
I felt very sorry for him throughout
the
marriage.
I think that's a really good manipulative strategy that they use. They get us to feel sorry for them. You know, and as that article was saying, that sometimes, you know, you just start feeling sorry. You hear, like, that they're very vulnerable, and they've had something terrible happen to them in their past, and you keep thinking, oh, well, that's why they're behaving this way. If only, you know, I can show them that I can love them more and that I can make them well if I show them unconditional love. Did you ever feel that way? Because I did.
Yes, I felt exactly that way. You know, I thought if I just keep loving him unconditionally and showing him this love, he'll know he's loved and he'll know how to... He'll learn how to love back.
Right. But, of course, they don't because they can't.
Nope. He never
did. Did you feel at the end at all that you were ever used?
Oh, yes. When it all ended, I was in shock. I was so
mm-hmm.
beat down and broken. I felt broken.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really, because I was able to get back up, but I didn't feel like I could get back up. My brother, you know, saw me after this. I went to stay with him for a while, and he said it was awful seeing me that way, and he didn't know if I would ever recover.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. You get so emotionally beaten down, you don't even recognize yourself anymore. I know that another reason that, you know, this article was talking about, the women stay, is because that, you know, you're scared. And you've been manipulated, or like we call it, gay-lighted, where you're starting to think that and nothing you do is right. You lose your self-confidence.
Yeah.
And I used to hear from mine, well, if you leave, you'll never meet anybody else. Nobody else will ever love you the way I do. And you start doubting yourself because, you know, you're being hit down all the time, if not physically, at least, you know, emotionally, and you're being told you're not worthwhile and that you're not worthy of love. And you start believing these messages because you're being rejected on one end, you know, that man doesn't want to touch you, and then he's telling you, well, nobody will ever love you this much. So I think that we get these confused messages and it beats us down even more. Did you ever hear anything like that in your marriage?
I don't remember the gay husband telling me that nobody would ever love me like he did. My first husband used to tell me that one. I was definitely afraid to make my own decisions. I got to where I didn't even want to go anywhere by myself. I had no confidence in myself whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was pretty hard on me. I couldn't even turn up the air or turn on the heat. Or even when I was working and paying for the phone bill, you know, he griped about every move I made. I slammed his truck door too hard. I shut the door too hard. He was just at me constantly, daily. And it went on
terrible.
For years. And I lost all confidence in myself.
I know, and that's what it does to you. And that's why it's so hard to build up confidence again, because you have so many doubts in yourself. That's why I tell women that gay husband recovery is a process, and it doesn't happen in a month or a year. You know, that you're constantly making changes and moving ahead, but then you get knocked down because of all these inner messages in you. One of the things is said that, and I think that you and I are talking about this, one of the reasons we don't leave is because we truly believe you can change him. Because the relationship starts out so wonderfully, and because he can be so terrific after a fight, you hold on to the idea that you can bring out the best in him. All you have to do is find the right words and behave in the right way, and you'll have the man of your dreams. Love conquers all, right? Wrong.
Yeah.
No one can make another person be anything.
My mother had that philosophy, love conquers all, and you can treat the most horrible person, treat them well, and they'll respond to that. My mother thought that until the day she died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I was young and my father, you know, beat my mother and stuff, and she thought that was because he loved her. So all those messages are just...
Right.
Wrong.
Right. Did she ever change?
Well, my mother and father divorced, and he kind of mellowed out in his old age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they...
Did she ever meet anyone again?
They both did.
Mm-hmm.
But then, at the end of his... my mother and father had... 11 children together, and at the end of his life, when he was dying, he came here to my mother so that she could care for him, and she cared for him till he passed away.
Hmm. How was her next husband?
Oh, my mother did not marry good men.
Okay. Well, you know what? I always say this is hereditary. And I really do believe that we follow what we see at home. And if you live in crazy, you go out and you marry crazy. Because that is our norm. That's the only norm we have to go by. You think that's true?
I do think that's true.
You know, we see how our mothers are treated, and we think that's the way life's supposed to be. And if our mothers can accept it, you know, why aren't we accepting it? And I know it sounds crazy, but we do have learned behavior. That's what we do. And that's why I always tell women, you have to be a role model for your children. They can't see this kind of marriage unless you expect them to have this kind of marriage. You know, if you're not in a happy marriage, don't expect them to be in a happy marriage. And
so
that's pretty much the way your life followed, right?
Yes, and so that saying, you know, you're staying for the kids, it's not a valid. It's not a good reason to stay.
No, it's not. I absolutely agree with you. You know, the worst thing is to stay together in a destructive marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. The kids start blaming themselves for the misery in the marriage. They hear constant fighting and yelling, or they see all this unhappiness, which is a very unhealthy environment to bring children up in. But I think a lot of times people are scared to do the right thing. And here's like another one that I think that you and I can relate to. It says here, some women just keep staying there because they're more afraid of being alone again than being in a painful relationship. You've been alone and it's lonely. You want someone to talk to in the evening, to cuddle up to at night, to at least once in a while take the kids. Even picking up his laundry, cooking meals he doesn't appreciate, and fighting with him is more appealing than coming home to an empty house. If he does help pay the bills and do a few chores, and especially if he pays most of the bills and can be counted on to do some of the heavy work, it's even harder to think about going it alone. Supporting a family and doing everything to maintain a household as a single person is really, really hard. Maintaining the fiction that you have a partner feels better than dealing with the reality of going it alone. And I think that's true too, right?
Yes. I had some of that fear too, you know, being alone at my age, you know, starting off over at my age. I would always put my age in there. Oh, I have to start all over now. You know, and it was scary, but I mean, I'm so thankful now.
Right, and you know what? You're one of those people who had to make that decision, and you were scared, but you did it, right?
Yes, I think it was forced upon me, but I, you know, I did it.
And the last reason it says why women stay together in these destructive marriages, and I think this really has a lot to do with our women too, is because you love him. The most common answer I get when I ask women why they stay in bad relationships is because I love him. Love isn't always rational. It's true. There's no accounting for chemistry. But the fact is that love, especially one-sided love, isn't enough to sustain a relationship. It's like one hand clapping. And I think that's a problem, too. Some of our women aren't leaving or getting out of these marriages because they stopped loving these men. They found out they're gay. And in many cases,
yeah,
the men want to leave. And they're not even given a choice. So that's where I think these marriages are different, right?
Yes, yes. It's hard at first, you know, when you first find out that they're gay, it's hard to see them as gay because they've been acting straight around you for years, and your mind's really not, you're still viewing them as a straight man, even though you have evidence. Your
uh-huh.
heart's still wanting to see them as straight.
Uh-huh.
But you start accepting it. And then you realize that you never really knew them.
Exactly. And all of these are all valid reasons why people stay and why people are afraid, you know, to leave marriages and why, you know, they just hope they're going to keep changing. But we know from experience they're not going to change. The marriages will get worse. These guys don't want to be there. You know, it's different than sometimes marriages where there's problems and you could fix it. These are marriages where you can't even fix it. You know, they're marriages with gay men. I mean, they're not meant to be. These are what I call mismarriages. You know, they're mistakes. Other people call them mixed. I call them mistake marriages. And
they can't
you know,
be fixed.
Anyway, we're coming to the end of our show sooner than I thought here. But Deborah, thank you so much for joining me. For people who love Deborah, she promised she would come back at least every other month and be a guest, right?
Yes.
I mean,
and
I'll
thank
hate to
you
pinpoint
for having
you
me,
right
Bonnie.
On the radio. Oh, please, it's my pleasure to have you. And once again, go to Amazon and look for Deborah Sutton, Sutton, and there you'll find Deborah's book if you haven't read it yet. And you can get it, Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors. Deborah has a warm heart, and she really has no boundaries when it comes to helping straight wives. I will say that. And so she'll be back with us again in a couple of months. If you need more contact information, just send me a note at bondk@aol.com. Deborah, I love you. Thank you so much for being
love
on the show.
Love you, too. You're
and
welcome.
We love all of our women, all of our straight wives. We want to wish you a wonderful holiday, knowing tomorrow that the horror day is over. Life will begin again. We have 9 months of non-reminders just to be happy. So I'll be looking forward to talking to you all next week. And Deborah, love to you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
All right, good night.